Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
The Sports Virus Podcast.
Welcome to the Sports Virus Podcast, everybody. I'm Joe Castellano along with Ray Woodson, and we're brought to you by Kane's Tire in San Rafael, California, where they've had the lowest prices in Marin County for over 60 years. And we're brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco, offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. And the pros, Ray, are playing right now at the PGA Championship outside of Louisville. And so far you got Xander Schauffele shooting a 62 today, has a three-stroke lead on Tony Finau. And Thigala is also in the clubhouse now at 65. Some really good scores, but I kind of saw that coming a little bit from Schauffele. He was in it last week and just missed some putts. So it looks like he's pretty locked in early on, but of course got a lot of other golfers on the course.
Well, first of all, how fitting that one of our sponsors is Harding Park, TPC Harding Park, because that's where the PGA Championship was held a few years ago. We remember the shot by Colin Morikawa at 16, one of the great shots in golf history that helped propel him to the win. So here we are talking golf, you bet. Listen, I've talked about Schauffele before. The guy is, as in the parlance of the times, he's super, uber, mega talented. There's no doubt about that. There have been four 62s shot in majors in the history of golf, and he's got two of them in the last year. He had one at the U.S. Open in L.A. Last year. So there's no doubt the guy has the game to go low at any time. And he's got, and I posted on social media somewhere a few years ago that this guy's going to win a major in the next couple of years. But he has not been able to close the deal in tournaments in the last few years. For all the talent, something goes flat on Sunday. I wouldn't call it choking, but something is missing on Sundays for him. And Rory McIlroy ran him down last week, and Rory is looming in this tournament. I think he shot a 66 today, which is, I guess, rather pedestrian compared to some of the rounds they're rolling out there. But, you know, they do that at the majors. They set things up for fireworks to get people drawn in on the first day. It's not that Schauffele's going to end up shooting 36 under at this tournament. It's going to get a lot tougher. But it's going to be one of the storylines here. Can he close the deal? And Scottie Scheffler, I think, has just teed off. You know, so there's a lot of ways to go in this. But, you know, this is what they need in the PGA Championship and golf in particular, is this kind of drama. And the leaderboard is looking really, really, really good, as it should in a major.
Well, you know, you just mentioned Scheffler, and it's much like what happened on this podcast, what was it, last week or a couple of weeks ago, when Yaz went deep in the middle of the podcast at Fenway Park, which was really cool. Well, this time Scheffler, second shot on the first hole, 9-iron, 169 yards. First of all, 9-iron, 169 yards, holds it.
Of course he does.
For eagle. So, yeah, nice start, first hole, eagle.
Talk about announcing your presence. Not that he needed to already, but, that's how you put your stamp on the tournament right away and tell everybody, hey, I'm here. It's Scottie Scheffler and everyone else in golf. I think if anybody can challenge him, it'll be a guy like Rory. He's got the game. And maybe Xander, maybe Brooks Koepka, who's, you know, got five majors in his back pocket. But this guy is the king of the clubhouse right now, until further notice.
Yeah.
So would anybody, it's the chalk bet right now that he's going to win this championship.
Yeah, it's kind of hearkening back to the days of Tiger Woods, who, by the way, played, and I think he was one over today, but it kind of harkens back to that where everybody else in the field is trying to figure out a way to beat him. When he made that shot, it was one bounce and in the hole, and then he looked at his caddy, kind of gave it the Michael Jordan look when Jordan made that shot, and was like, hey, you know, whatever I do just kind of works right now, you know, when he put up his hands. This time he just gave him an expression like, you know what, I mean, yeah, that's a pretty good start. I kind of expect that sort of face.
Just like they drew it up, you know.
Yeah,
I remember the MJ shrug when he hit like five threes in a row in the finals, and that's kind of like that was a big deal back then. it's not as big a deal now, but it was, you know, it was a game changer at the time. And yeah, you just shrug like, hey, I can't miss. What can I say? And that's the zone that Scheffler is in right now, and it's a zone we have not seen really since Tiger. It's not to say that he's going to end up being like Tiger, but he's that guy right now. He's that dude.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. All right, we'll be paying attention to that. It's only the first day, and already you got a lot of excitement with that. Let's talk about the Giants. The Giants played the Dodgers, and the first two games didn't go well at all, and the Giants hadn't beaten L.A. to start out the season going into yesterday's game. And then finally they had a game that, you know, they really looked like a decent team, and they made some plays, and Luis Matos made a leaping catch at the wall, which is kind of scary these days for the Giants because they've been having injuries at that wall. They had Slater go down. They had Jung-Hoo Lee go down trying to make a catch, and this time it was really an outstanding play by Matos, and we kind of saw the best and the worst of him in center field in that series because he took some bad routes on some other balls. But, you know, he had that Dodger blue glove, and he made that great catch.
Well, yeah, and that maybe the Giants might think about changing that fence a little bit because it's just at the height where you can bang your shoulder into it. And I get it, you know, you want to be able to give the outfielder a chance to rob home runs just like that. I think you could probably place a little higher and do that. Anyway, Matos has got some skills. There's no doubt about it. He's shown some flashes. Some of these young players have shown flashes, but they've got to do more than that now. They got to step up because they've had so many injuries. These guys have to be contributors all the time now. Ramos has had some good moments, and he had a couple of great defensive plays a couple of days ago. These guys have to contribute on a consistent basis. You know, the other night, it's a tie ball game in the ninth. Tyler Fitzgerald comes in to pinch run, gets picked off.
Yeah, that was bad, yeah.
You had one job, right? And they end up losing 6-4 in extra innings. You know, they need a little bit more than that from their young players. They're starting to get it a little bit, but they need a lot more if they're going to presume to be in contention. You know, thank God for them that there's a third wild card now. That's what's keeping them relevant because the rest of it doesn't look too good at the moment. They looked good last night because their starting pitcher looked good. Logan Webb was excellent. And the bullpen did a pretty good job, and Duvall closed it out. And that's the blueprint for this team. But it doesn't work every single night. And, you know, with so many injuries, they've had some inconsistency in their starting rotation, which should be good. And they've definitely had inconsistency on offense. And this team can't afford that. There's, you know, you look at the roster at the start of the year, and they did a decent job putting this roster together. A lot of people ripped the front office. I think they really tried, you know, but nothing has gone right. They've had all these injuries, and, you know, top of the list is Snell. And now you look at Soler, and Conforto's been in and out of the lineup, as he has wont to do. And it's not a workable situation for a team with little margin for error. But what's keeping them in it is the playoff format. And so they're, I think, just a couple of games out of a playoff spot still, you know, even with all their troubles. But I'm looking for evidence that they're going to turn around. I don't see it yet.
Yeah, one of the biggest issues, really, Ray, I think, is Patrick Bailey right now being out and not knowing really when he's going to come back because he had the concussion, then he was feeling ill. I don't know that they know what's going on there. And there's a guy who can swing the bat and is a really good defensive catcher, and the pitchers like throwing to him, and he's got a great arm and everything. And, you know, him being out and trying to put others in there that, you know, especially – you know, you put somebody in there who really hasn't been a great catcher in Blake Sable. He's just learning how to play the position. And, you know, he can't be your everyday catcher. They were fortunate to pick up Kurt Casale, but, you know, even he's not an everyday catcher. He's a good defensive catcher. So I think that is a real problem spot for the Giants right now.
Well, no doubt, when you get to a point where you're uttering a sentence, they were fortunate to sign Kurt Casale.
Right.
You know you're in trouble. I mean, he's a fine backup catcher, and you know, he's going to be some help at this point. But that just shows you how desperate they've become. You know, they let Joey Bart go. He hasn't been great since he's been with the Pirates. That's not the point. The point is that the minute they do that, then two other catchers go down. It looks like Murphy's on the 60-day IL now. And, you know, he figured to be a pretty decent backup with a bat, and he hasn't hit, and then he's not available now. So that's part of what's just gone really sideways as part of the plan for the Giants this year. And now they got to retool, I think Casale is going to be a good backup. The problem with Bailey, the kind of injury he has, you don't want to rush it. It's the boy, that's out of all the injuries that you don't want to rush. That's pretty close to the top of the list. So they've got to be patient with him. And, yeah, they had to go out and get a veteran catcher. And if he hits just a little bit, it'll be a plus. But at least he can handle the pitching staff. But, you know, that's one of the many problems they have right now.
I think the guy who's really been impressive since he came up when Conforto went down with the injury is Elliot Ramos. I mean, not just swinging the bat pretty well so far, but what he's doing in the outfield. He's been making some really good plays out there. He has a really good arm. We saw him throw out a couple of runners at second base. You know, he looks like he's dangerous and maybe very much improved from where he was before. It's good to see because, I mean, that's the thing, Ray. The Giants just haven't had many players, position players, that have come up through the system that are contributing. I mean, that's what you look at with the Dodgers. Yeah, they spend a lot of money, but they also have players that they've brought up through the system that are contributing.
Yeah, you know, Brandon Crawford and Buster Posey and Pablo Sandoval. Those are the ones who come to mind in the last decade or so have been major contributors out of the farm system.
Yeah, Brandon Belt. Belt, too, yeah.
And Brandon Belt, yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, Brandon. Never mean to. I can't forget the captain, who I guess is still looking for a job, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, maybe if the Giants need a DH, they can sign him up. I don't know. Anyway, you know, it's a situation where you've got all these young players that you've brought up through the system all through the years, and it seems to be the same story every time. They come up here and they just don't hit. They don't hit consistently. They don't make contact consistently. And, you know, this is a team that badly needs offense. So are any of these guys going to be an everyday contributor? I don't know. I think Ramos has grown up a little bit. You know, I was there in the dugout when they drafted him. The first round in, I think it was 2017, and we were all asking him questions, and I asked him about what his timeline was to make the major leagues, what his hope was, and he thought maybe 4 or 5 years. Well, now we're 7 years, and you get to that point, you stop being a prospect, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And some guys develop a little faster than others. He was having a pretty good year in Sacramento, and it seems to have bled over to the major leagues, at least so far. He's got a little more confidence. Is that going to last? I don't know. Are the old habits going to come back? Is he going to be chasing pitches blown away and having a high strikeout rate? Matos is the guy who's interesting because last year he got a lot of walks. He was one of the rare hitters to come out of the Giants system who walked at a pretty good rate, had seemed to have pretty good eye, some pretty good patience, but they wanted more power out of him. Well, he's come back pretty bulked up, and now he's got an opportunity with Lee. You know, I don't know how long this is going to be for Lee. That's a rather troubling injury. Another guy who hurt his shoulder against the wall, who was, I, from what I saw from Lee, I thought, you know, this guy might play in the major leagues. This might be playable. You got to give him some time, but he looks like a guy who's going to be some help, and was pretty good defensively in center field as well. But now we got to set that aside. That's another thing that's gone awry for this team this year. So here's a young player who's got a chance. Step up.
Absolutely. You know, the one guy who has done well, and I'll give a lot of credit to Farhan for this player, is Lamont Wade. Lamont Wade Jr., you know, just the way he approaches it, his on-base percentage is 467. So, I mean, he'd obviously be the guy that you maybe want to put in the leadoff spot more often than not, especially against right-handers. But he has really played well for the Giants. I mean, I know he's had kind of ups and downs, but so far this year, he's the one real positive in this lineup. And, you know, hopefully that continues for him.
Yeah, you know, as a first baseman and a DH, and, you know, he's sort of the anomaly. Again, a guy with a tremendous eye and tremendous patience and a little pop in the bat. He's been one of their good free agent signings. And then you look at Jorge Soler, who's also injured, and he's had 97, I think he's had 97 base runners, and he's driven in 4.
Oh, man.
You know, I mean, and he's had a couple home runs, I think, as well. So that is a pretty sad stat for a guy that you were hoping to drive in runs, but you look at his career, and he's had these big gaping holes in his career where he just hasn't been available, hasn't been effective. Then all of a sudden he hits 36 home runs. So we didn't know what we were going to get with this guy. You kind of hoped he played as well as he did in Miami and Atlanta, but Now, that's by the wayside, too, at least for a while. You hope when he comes back, he plays a little bit more to the back of the baseball card and is a little more productive. I mean, the odds are he will be, but will it be too late by that time? When Robbie Ray comes, will it be too late? What's going to happen with Snell? Is he going to be any kind of help, or are you going to end up trading him? This team is, I think, for some of the more cynical Giants fans, it's turning out to be what they thought it was going to be, another mediocre team. I had a little more hope than that, not high hopes, but I had a little more hope. And I think the front office had a little more hope. But, man, listen, John Lennon wrote it in the song Beautiful Boy. Life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. That's what's happened with the Giants.
That is true. It's so funny because, you know, you have all these predictions before the season. You just don't know how it's going to turn out. And even over the course of a couple of weeks, like, I was thinking Keaton Wynn was really pitching well. And, I mean, this guy's a world beater right there. You know, he's got this splitter. He looks great. And then he just gets crushed a few innings where it was just terrible for him. Yep. And now his ERA is over 6. And then, you know, a guy like Logan Webb, I mean, he had a really good start against the Dodgers. So now maybe he's back locked in. You just don't know. You put this together. You hope that it all works out. And who's dependable? Well, I mean, your closer so far has been pretty dependable in Duvall. Some members of this bullpen have been, you know, pretty dependable. Jordan Hicks has been, you know, surprising because as we've talked about it before. We thought, okay, reliever turned starter. How's that going to work out? He's been pretty good so far. So you just don't know. I mean, you kind of throw it together. You don't have the you know, resumes that the Dodgers do, especially with their lineup. I just looking at their guys yesterday, when they came up, every time you're looking at, you know, Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, all these guys, you know, Will Smith, all these guys that are, if they're in a little bit of a slump, they got three other guys behind them that can pick them up. And the Giants just don't have that kind of depth.
No, not even close. I'll say it again. I've said it a million times. There isn't anybody in that lineup that the opposing pitchers look at and say, "Oh, I can't let that guy beat me."
Right.
You know, I got to pitch around that guy. Got to worry about that guy. There's some decent bats when they're going well, but again, very little margin for error. The gap between the Dodgers' talent and the Giants' talent now is massive. It really is.
No, it was proven. Yeah.
It's not a question of challenging them for the National League West, and it isn't going to be a question for a long time, despite what happened in 2021, which is, you know, one of the great pennant races in history. That was an anomaly for sure. This is what we're looking at for these two teams for the next few years, unless this farm system starts producing. And I know Buster Posey, as being part of the ownership group, has been very vocal about that. And on that, I agree with him. This is where it has to happen. You know, they're getting some arms. They always seem to get some arms, but this is the most star-crossed organization I've seen as far as producing hitters on a consistent basis. It's so funny. Some franchises, you know, they take change out of their pocket and hitters fall out. You know, it's amazing. And some guys who didn't figure to be hitters end up hitting better than they thought in the major leagues. Not with the Giants. Not, you know, in the last 20 years, not since Bonds left. There have only been a few exceptions. So that part of the narrative has to turn around if the Giants are going to challenge the Dodgers again, because, attracting a top-flight hitter here, just it isn't going to happen. It's always the same pantomime, with whether it's Stanton or Shohei Ohtani or whomever. And, you know, I will say last night, that's what made Duvall's save so impressive, is because he had to go up against the top of that Dodgers lineup. And, you know, he pitched around at a couple of guys, and Betts started it off with the walk. But, Duvall got it done. That's the main thing, and that's all you care about. You don't go for style points against a lineup like that. You just want to get him out, and he did it. So that was actually a pretty impressive save for him last night, a very impressive outing for Webb. But can you do that on a consistent basis? Man, you look at that starting rotation, and it could be good. It could be really good if all the pieces were in place. You know, you're talking about Harrison coming up now, one of the top prospects. You're talking about Hicks and how surprisingly good he's been with that sinker and that splitter. Is that going to continue? Well, maybe. You talk about Snell. I mean, the guy won the Cy Young last year. Is he going to return to form? And then you have Webb, who is second in the Cy Young voting. Cobb is out for a while, but then Robbie Ray coming up, who could be a frontline starter. Second half of the year, this could be a lights-out rotation. Problem is, it could be too late by that time.
Coming up, we'll talk about the 49ers 2024 schedule when the Sports Virus podcast continues.
When it's time for new tires, you want the lowest prices and the best service, don't you? Well, Kane's Tire in San Rafael has you covered on both. Kane's has the lowest prices in Marin County, and they provide the warm and welcoming service that you can only receive from a family-run business. Voted best of Marin for 35 years in a row, Kane's prices beat Costco's prices every time. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street in San Rafael. Give them a call at 415-453-2942. That's 415-453-2942 for Kane's Tire.
Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your two-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. All right, let's switch gears and talk about the San Francisco 49ers schedule. The NFL schedule came out yesterday, and it's going to be interesting to think about this Niners schedule. It's a very difficult schedule, I think. I mean, you were mentioning to me before the podcast that it was rated as the 12th toughest. I was thinking it was harder than that because, I mean, there's some games in there, especially once you get into October when you have to play the Chiefs, the Super Bowl champs, got to play the Cowboys. You know, you're playing at Tampa Bay. They were a playoff team. You're playing back-to-back games, Ray, end of November into December, at Green Bay and at Buffalo when it can be really cold against two really good teams. And you're playing the Lions, another team, you know, that was really good that made it to the NFC Championship last year. So all of that makes me think this is not the easiest schedule in the world.
No, no, it is not. I'd like to see some of the tougher schedules because this one is, you know, it's got some spots in it, like you said, where things could go really sideways for them. It's not set up for them to go 14-3. It's 11-6, maybe 12-5 if they play outstanding football to win the division. That's for a team that is coming back from the Super Bowl and a crushing loss. And sometimes teams don't respond well coming back from Super Bowls the next year. That's another part of the equation we have to look at. But, you know, the talent is still there. There's no doubt about that. And I'll be very interested to see how they incorporate the talent that they've gained in this receiver core. The other part of it is they need to have some help on the offensive line. Sounds like they've gotten a little bit of that. Can Purdy continue his development? A lot of questions still around a team that's very talented, and part of that is due to this schedule being so tough. But, you know, that's the way it is. They know what it is now. They got to prepare for it. And like I said, if you talk to me in December and they're ending up 11-6 and 12-5 and win the division, I think that'd be a very positive outcome.
I agree. You got two Thursday night games. To me, those are always difficult because they kind of wear you out. And you've got, I think, a little bit of a break in that when you do play at Miami, because you're going to play at Miami, but you're playing them December the 22nd. In Miami.
Right.
It's so much better than playing them in September when it's sweltering. If you've ever been in Miami in early September or, you know, even any time in that month, it is just awful. You can't even walk around, let alone playing a football game. So I think they got a break there. But those cold weather games, those are going to be tough because those are good teams. And, you know, I think at Buffalo is always difficult when you get into December because not only could it be cold and wet, but it also gets really windy there. And that makes it tough to kick field goals and throw.
Yeah. Yeah, don't even talk about field goals right now.
I don't know why that came to mind first, but it did.
I'm going to have some nightmares about that. But you know, this is the NFL. This is what happens. You get a tougher schedule when you have a better season. So everybody gets that. By the way, Joe, I have been to Miami in July, and coming back from the Caribbean when I was 10 years old, and we had some cousins that lived in a suburb called Hialeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we couldn't go anywhere because there was a nationwide airline strike. All the domestic airlines in the country were shut down.
Oh, man.
and my mom had to get home. So we stayed there a couple days. Well, it turns out that they had a swimming pool, which was nice, but we couldn't swim in it because the screen that covers the pool to bar it from mosquitoes had blown off in a hurricane the month before. So that's, yeah, you can have Florida. I mean, I don't want any of that. I'll take earthquakes over that. But we ended up taking a Greyhound bus cross-country in the summer of 1966 to get home. That's a whole other story. But, yeah, I've been to Miami in July. It's no fun. I've been to Miami Beach in May, and that was actually really nice. And I've been to Key West in June, and it got pretty sticky then. And that's all I want for now. That's all I want for one lifetime.
Yeah, it might be worse to play early in the season against Miami than it is to play at Buffalo December 1.
I think you're right.
The reason why I brought up kicking before throwing, which I think most people would say throwing the football before they're thinking about kicking, the reason I brought it up is because I once did a game in Buffalo with Greg Gumbel as his stats guy, and it was a field goal of about 35 yards. I can't remember the kicker, but the wind was blowing a gale force from left to right, and this guy's kicking a field goal from right to left. And the ball's in the air, and I'll never forget, it looked like it was suspended in the air forever because the wind was just blowing it backwards, and it was just sitting there, and then it just dropped, and it was short, and it was no way this kicker was going to miss whatever. It was like a 35-yard field goal, which is like an extra point now. And it just, the wind affected it so bad. It's kind of like in golf where you see a ball, it just goes up, and it looks like it's suspended there. It's just not moving. And that's the kind of wind they get there in Orchard Park.
Well, see, the kicker should have gone three clubs up. That was the problem there.
Yeah, exactly.
I've done that. I played in some courses way up north where it got windy, and you're going right into the wind, and you're 110 away, and you're thinking, oh, yeah, 9-iron. And it goes straight up the chute, and it lands 30 yards short. It can play havoc with kickers. There's no doubt about that. You know, it's hard to say what condition teams are in. I used to play the game of what their schedule is going to be, knowing it was a silly game, but it was fun to do because you don't know what state a team is going to be in by the time you get to November and December. Injuries are the story in the NFL for a lot of teams. It can send their season north or south. I mean, the Giants or the 49ers are starting off with the Jets, and the Jets season went south on the first series last year when Aaron Rodgers went out. Now, yeah. here he's coming back, and I guess he wants a piece of the Niners. Okay, whatever. But I've got a feeling the Niners are going to get a bigger piece of him. But, you know, that's it. You suffer injuries to key players, and it goes the other direction for you. So that could end up being a game that won't be as hard as 49er fans think, or it could be even worse for the 49ers. The whole story, more than the schedule, is how healthy you can stay and how much depth you have.
Absolutely. All right, let's finish up by talking about what we started with, which was the golf tournament, the PGA Championship, and the fact that you have players from the LIV Tour playing in it. And I know you expressed some opinions about it. I'm on your side. I'm not a big fan of LIV, and I just wonder if there's a solution, Ray, because if you've got these players that are sometimes participating because they're in the majors, I wonder if you try to figure out something where you can have them play against each other more often. I don't know. I mean, it seems just kind of weird that all of a sudden you filter them in for majors, but then you don't see them again. I really don't miss those players that much. I mean, I think there are plenty of players on the PGA Tour that are fun to watch anyway. But, I mean, eventually they're going to have to come up with some solution because they are sort of merged together now, but they haven't really figured it out.
Well, that tells you something when some of the bigger stars of the game leave and you say you don't miss them. And I agree with
I
that.
I don't, yeah.
I don't miss Brooke Koepka's sour face, you know, even his sour demeanor, as good as a player as he is. He went to the dark side. DeChambeau and his nuttiness, I don't really miss that. It was fun to watch for a while, but he's decided to go another direction. Jon Rahm and his petulance, as much talent as he has.
Yeah.
I don't miss that. So fine, go and make your money. Go and collect your blood money. I don't really care. But for the game as a whole, at some point they have to come up with some sort of agreement or compromise. And I hate having to negotiate with a country like Saudi Arabia that's trying to buy up sports, but you know, they've got some leverage, unfortunately. And in order for the PGA Tour to survive, for pro golf to survive on a worldwide level, they're going to have to do something because, you know, aside from the majors, the ratings plummet. And for some people, I guess they do miss some of the stars. They don't think it's the same with the PGA Tour. I don't know what the solution is, but they've got to come up with something. And it sounds like they've been hitting a snag in these negotiations. You know, the PGA Tour put themselves in a very awkward position, and you know, some of it's not their fault because Saudi Arabia has entered the chat, and you know, they've come into it to the room like the Schlitz malt liquor bull. You know, they're right. They're coming in with a whole lot of cash and a whole lot of leverage. Makes it really tough. But we may be looking at the PGA Tour being a shadow of what it formerly was, unless some sort of agreement can be put into place to get everybody back on board and back on the same page, because this splintering doesn't work. The golf fan, and there are some avid golf fans, but they're not so avid that they're going to want to keep paying attention to a product that they think is diluted.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's really a shame that they haven't been able to figure it out, but we will enjoy watching the PGA Championship this weekend. It's definitely going to be exciting to see who takes it and who chases down Scheffler, if that's the case, because Schauffele definitely put up a good first day to be able to stay, hey, look at this, I just shot 62. So, you know, maybe that makes it a little interesting for Scheffler that he's not going to blow away the competition.
Well, Scheffler says, look at this, I hold out the first.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
How do you like me now?
I see your 62 and I raise you, yeah.
Yeah, this kind of stuff is great for golf. If they can, you know, keep throwing haymakers like this, we'll see how it goes. I don't have a prediction for this weekend except for, you know, probably Scheffler's going to be in the last group. That's the prediction I'll make. and maybe this time, because I think he's a good guy, maybe Schauffele can close the deal for once.
Oh, I like Schauffele. Yeah, two of my favorite guys at the top right now, Schauffele and Finau. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
Love those
guys.
Yeah,
it should be fun.
Yeah. All right, Ray, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thanks.
All right. Take care, Joe.
That's Ray Woodson. I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to the Sports Virus Podcast on the Believe Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.